You're listening to Raphael Epstein.
We are talking about Studio 54 and Jurassic World with Josh Nelson, Mr. Filmology himself. That's filmology.com, and that is the Twitter handle too. Josh, welcome.
Good afternoon.
Look, interested in people's best dance films. I'm especially interested in, we'll take all comers, 1300-222-774. I want people to nominate the disco or rave scene that actually makes you feel like you're in the middle of the dance floor when the electric beat is thumping, because I think that's quite a hard experience to put on film. I wouldn't know why, but it's just hard to put that up on the big screen. They're re-releasing Studio 54. Firstly, why are they doing that? Well, they didn't like it the first time around. The studio cut it to pieces or something?
Yeah, there's an interesting backstory. So 54 was originally released in 1998. The director, Mark Christopher, had finished it. He'd completed the cut. It even screened to, I think, some of the critics, particularly the New York critics, who on the back of that cut nominated Mike Myers for his performance as club owner Steve Rebell. And then the Weinsteins got involved, as they often do,
and it
hit the scissors. They said it was quote-unquote, I'm not sure if it was quote-unquote, but the gist was it's too gay. You need to cut the gayness out of the film.
Right.
You need to make it more, not family-friendly.
So
but
even in 98, they're sort of scared of being too homoerotic or something.
And I think part of it was, you know, this is a film that had the 90s teen cast, people like Ryan Phillippe, Nev Campbell, whose part was significantly enlarged in a kind of a heterosexual romance in the studio cut. Mike Myers was in there coming off the back of the first Austin Powers film, so they increased the humour. So 40 minutes was cut, and predominantly all the sequences involving bisexuality, the drug use was tampered down.
Because there wouldn't have been any of that at studio.
Yeah, I know, exactly. And they introduced 25 minutes in its place, most of which the director, Mark Christopher, didn't have much control over. Okay. So this has been, I mean, the film sort of tanked critically at the time. In fact, the critics who'd put Mike Myers forward for a nomination then withdrew it. I think it was one of the first times that actually sort of rescinded that nomination. And this came out, I mean, it came out in 1998, and we had three films, 97, 98, all dealing with similar...
Boogie Nights.
Boogie Nights, Last Days of Disco, which actually features Studio 54,
right. Yep.
And Todd Haynes' Velvet Goldmine, which was more the glam scene in the UK. And those all deal with kind of queer aesthetics, queer style, with the glam era, music and sexuality, and the kind of halcyon days of the 70s. And then it all kind of comes a cropper in the, you know, the 80s or the early 80s in each of those films. So this film at the time felt like a sort of a poor cousin.
Yeah, it did feel unrealized. I remember coming out of it thinking, I don't remember it too well, but I remember thinking, oh, that just kind of didn't go too many places.
Well, really sanitized. I mean, I was actually working at a cinema when this came out, and I remember thinking, you know, there's some great serious moments in this film, but had no idea of the fact that it had been cut to pieces. But even that was my impression back then. And so this poor director is kind of not really carved out much of a career since. Well, there's rumours that he leaked a version of the director's cut VHS sequences sort of forced back in, and it suddenly started to do the bootleg scene.
So then now he's gone back and done the real thing.
And finally, 17 years later, he's finally managed to kind of reproduce a cut that approximates what his original vision did.
Look, let's just remind people. I haven't seen this recut. I was just watching clips of it on the web today. There's a clip here where Ryan Phillippe's character, who's called Shane, he's trying to get Steve Rebell, that's the Mike Myers character, trying to get Steve to put his friends on the door list. And you might recall Ryan Phillippe only gets in initially because he's beautiful and he takes his shirt off for Mike Myers' leery stare earlier. So this is just, I guess, Ryan Phillippe learning how things work at Studio 54.
Once a month, the nephew of the King of Saudi Arabia, right, flies 7,000 miles to dance here for one night, all night, then gets back on his plane at sunrise. He tells me it's the only place on earth that he feels totally free. So naturally, you know, we have a responsibility. So I repeat, do they look like you?
They're my friends.
Fine, I'll put them on the list. But they better look like you.
Actually, Courtney, who helps put the show together, was saying that it reminded him of the Steve Carell role in Foxcatcher, this sort of charismatic, unresolved, homoerotic, real sort of drama and tension. So does more of that come out in the film? Does it work?
Oh, absolutely. This now feels like a film of substance, as opposed to that sanitized nostalgia trip, slick nostalgia trip that the original cut felt like. And now I see why the critics were raving about Myers' performance. I mean, this is probably his most significant, serious work outside of the kind of typecast, you know, wacky comedies that he's done.
And a million miles away from the extravagance of Spy Who Loved Me and all that sort of stuff.
Yeah, and I mean, and he, you know, I think with the recut or the initial cut, they brought in the Myers comic aspects, which seems so ridiculous, really, and incongruous. But, I mean, it's still a very familiar tale. You've got the kind of young, hot, innocent guy who crosses the Hudson from Jersey to New York and opens up this world of drug, sex, and disco. And then, you know, like a glitter-covered Icarus, he crashes and burns, you know, and amidst all the hedonism and the fall of hedonism as the 70s gives way to the 80s. But it's done in a really interesting way. In fact, part of, I guess, what the director's cut brings to it in an aesthetic sense is that some of the sequences that they've reintroduced, obviously they didn't have the quality of the original celluloid, I'm guessing, anymore. So you've got these degraded VHS sequences in parts.
Oh, really?
Which brings a really interesting aesthetic to it because it gives
so
it...
So some of the shots are demonstrably or noticeably different?
Degraded, yeah. Uh-huh. So it almost feels like it brings almost an archival aesthetic to it, which I thought was really fascinating. And that brings it very much in line with things like Velvet Goldmine, where directors like Todd Haynes were playing with different stylistic modes. So this is very much a kind of, I think, an undiscovered queer cult classic waiting to be re-embraced. Yeah, I think if people had vague memories of 54, and I think it's, you know, it sort of has disappeared, it certainly hasn't stood the test of time, then maybe I think this is a worthy film. I think worth seeing. Yeah, absolutely. And I hope it's awful when you hear about stories like this to think that how many directors have suffered similar fates where they had that artistic vision, it was one of their early films, and they never got another gig.
Curse you, Weinsteins!
Yeah, so, you know, as much as the Weinsteins have elevated and given us so many great filmmakers by embracing them, there are the people left behind. But hopefully this may spark interest in him, and hopefully he's got something else to work with.
Okay, so it is 54, the director's cut, and it's on at Palace?
Cinema Nova in Carlton.
Okay. Look, I've been asking the question, and I love to hear your voice, 1300-222-774, the film that either has the best dance in it, or if you can get to the heart of that electronic music experience sprayed up on screen, it's a curious place to be. But love to hear from you. 1300-222-774. What are the dance scenes like in this?
Pretty good. I mean, you get the sense of the chaos. I mean, the utter hedonism. There's just bodies writhing. And, I mean, part of the real story behind Rebel and 54 was this idea of the democratization of the studio system, where it wasn't about who had the wealth. It was bringing in people who were street dwellers and the interesting celebrities, cross-dressers, and there's this recurring theme that this is a club full of misfits. And I think that really kind of comes through strongly in this version.
Actually, one great dance scene is in Snowpiercer, when they're travelling through the train. Don't want to give too much away about that film. With is it Chris Evans his name?
Yep.
The guy who plays Captain America? You know, there's one carriage, and that's a really sort of whoa in your face, people completely losing it to electronic
and they're
music.
All tripping. I actually have a nomination for just you sparked it before when you were talking about the dancing that involves you. It gives you the sense of being in a club. There's a sequence in Babel, where the Japanese deaf girl goes into a club in Tokyo. It was a club I first went to when I was in Tokyo called Womb. And you get the sense from her perspective, because she can't quite hear the music because she's deaf, but you hear the bass beat, dulled down bass beat with this laser light display, and her sort of being completely enchanted by the lights of the club. It was, well, apart from the deafness, this was my experience of going into Womb. It's an amazing club.
Yeah, okay. The other great scene is in Trainspotting, when they take ecstasy. And there's just, I mean, that film is so intense visually and aurally that you really feel like you're sort of inside their mind. And it has all of the intimidation that sort of, you know, the packed nightclub can produce. Let me read some of your texts. The opening scene of Blade with Wesley Snipes. Before the blood runs from the shower. A few of you texting. That is a very, very good, that is intensely similar to a rave. Great story here. In the late 90s, there used to be a three-story bar in Bendigo called Studio 54, and there was a bouncer who was a local rugby hero called Tower. He was on the door, and he would let you in if you could recite a line out of Patrick Swayze's Roadhouse. Oh, fantastic. Someone else saying in the second Matrix film there is a weird trance dance scene. I have deliberately steered away from the second and third films only because they are all described to me as terrible. And best dance, the Pulp Fiction moment between Travolta and Uma Thurman, yes.
Which he ripped off Fellini's 8.5.
Shh, don't die.
Sorry.
0437-774-774. There's a club scene in Black Swan to Chemical Brothers. I don't recall that.
I think that's in her night out, her moment of awakening, the Natalie Portman character.
A few of you texting in about that, and the finale in Footloose. Oh, first time I saw breakdancing.
On 774 ABC Melbourne, you're listening to Raphael Epstein.
And I do want to give an honourable mention on the text to Kevin, who's opened up the batting on movies, modern movies, completely devoted to dance. A bit more modern, but 2004's You Got Served, the final battle scene. Oh, yeah. Let's get there. You Got Served. So many good dance films out there that just be like, you know, Hollywood's Bollywood, really. Let's talk Jurassic World. I tell you what, Josh, we'll give people a bit of a flavour. Everyone's familiar with the Jurassic Park concept. Have a listen to this. This is the park's operations manager, Claire Deering, lead female, visiting Chris Pratt, the guy from the aforementioned Guardians of the Galaxy. He's called Owen in this. And they want Chris Pratt's help to test the security because they're amping up what's available at the Jurassic Entertainment Park with a new species, a genetically modified dinosaur. Have a listen.
Okay. Can we just focus on the asset, please?
The asset? Look, I get it. You're in charge out here. You got to make a lot of tough decisions. It's probably easier to pretend these animals are just numbers on a spreadsheet. But they're not. They're alive.
I'm fully aware they're alive.
You might have made them in a test tube, but they don't know that. They're thinking, I got to eat. I got to hunt. I got to... You can relate to at least one of those things, right?
Okay, so there's obviously intimations towards dinosaurs mating there. A bit of Chris Pratt humour.
Indeed.
So what's the basic setup with this one?
So it's set on the island from the original Jurassic Park, Isla Nublar, not to be confused with La Isla Bonita, the Madonna island. Sorry, I had to shoehorn that in somehow. So it plays on the idea that Jurassic Park has existed, and obviously because of the events of the first film, it's failed drastically. But in its wake, a new, bigger and greater park, Jurassic World, has sprung up. So this park, we get the sense, has been going for quite a while. And into this park, we have two young boys who've been sent off.
Got to have the children under threat. It's a Jurassic Park film, right?
Well, every Jurassic... I rewatched them all this week, and every film, almost the kind of key thread apart from dinosaurs, is they involve broken families, and dinosaurs and sending kids off to dinosaur parks seems to be the catalyst to restore broken families.
It's a bit like the innocent teenage girl in a horror film. Yeah. In these dinosaur films, you have to have the children who didn't have the childhood we'd all like them to have befriended by the dinosaur specialist and under threat. That's okay. I'm happy with the trope.
Well, and it's pure Spielberg. I mean, all his films deal with broken families in one way or another, mostly.
At least I know. I don't need to think. I just know what to expect.
Yeah, exactly. So the two brothers have been sent off, shipped off by their parents to their aunt, who we heard from there, played by Bryce Dallas Howard. She's the kind of corporate assistant running the park. And, you know, the conflict that emerges out of this, the theme park, is that, as you heard the discussion about the genetically modified dinosaur, as they refer to it, the Indominus Rex, which is part Tyrannosaurus Rex and part other species, and I won't divulge what other species, that becomes a key plot point later in the film. It's surprise, surprise,
Rex,
yeah, it gets loose.
No!
Shock, horror. Yeah. And, of course, we have to have the Chris Pratt character sort of introduced to try and solve the crisis before it reaches the center of the park where 20,000 people are holidaying.
Yeah.
I think this is pretty good. This is good, decent, fun, blockbuster fare. The opening of the film, the way in which it establishes the theme park, is really strong. I mean, so if you think about films when they typically have theme parks, whether it's Westworld or whatever it might be, they often feel like it's a fake park and there's extras roaming around pretending to have a good time. This really nails, I think, the experience of what theme parks are, overcrowding, the kitschness.
Yeah, so we've nailed the dance scene, and we've nailed the, to be honest, theme parks can be entirely overwhelming. So they've nailed that as well. Good.
And it feels like a theme park that, A, not only resembles contemporary theme parks, but one that I would actually like to go to, in spite of all the kind of kitschness and corporatization. So I think it sets the world really convincingly, and the special effects around that are quite great. And they do some kind of clever things in terms of set design, where I think it's the Megalodon enclosure, the water one.
Which one's a Megalodon?
It's a water-based, it's a gigantic water-based creature. And it begins above, and you have the typical sort of theme park, right, where it reaches up, grabs the food, and splashes the audience. But then the seating drops down, so the audience get the perspective from underneath the water as well. I thought that's a great idea. Yeah. So look, it sets the world well. I think the problem is, and it's something that the director, Colin Trevorrow, has been mentioning in publicity for the film, which is kind of strange, that he said when he signed on to direct the film, he wasn't allowed to see the script. And they gave him
this.
He had to sign on the basis of the concept alone and presumably the fact, the possibility of working under Spielberg as an executive producer. And he went to Spielberg after reading it and said, I just don't understand it. This script makes no sense. And Spielberg basically said,
you can write this shit, George, but we can't say it. Yeah, Harrison Ford said George Lucas.
Yes, you got 4 weeks, rewrite it. Right. So he and his writing partner have rewritten it. And it feels like there's competing voices. It feels like there's threads that were from an earlier draft that don't quite work. But just from a purely blockbuster point of view, a candy and popcorn type film, this is a lot of fun. The special effects are great. I mean, I think it's good to champion when they get it right. Even in contrast to the Spielberg one, you see the evolution. They're really convincing. And what it does, to its credit, it uses a combination of CGI, visual effects, but also animatronics. So when there's a key scene where Chris Pratt and the Dallas Howard character are nursing a wounded dinosaur, and they've used the tangible animatronics.
It's a real object.
Yeah. And the performances show. And that's something that Spielberg did in the first one. And this feels very much a worthy successor to that original one. From a gender point of view, I seem to mention this every other week, this feels like a boy's own adventure tale. I mean, you know, Chris Pratt's there. It's about two brothers. The Bryce Dallas Howard character is pretty much equivalent and reduced to the hapless Kate Capshaw type screaming incompetent woman of, say, Temple of Doom, which is a little disappointing. And there's a couple of other female characters that meet untimely ends in sort of unnecessarily violent sequences or circumstances. But look, I mean, overall...
It's a dinosaur film, Josh. Don't people have to die grisly deaths? I don't know.
Yeah, but usually it's the bad guys. You know, in the first one, I remember it's the blood-sucking lawyer who meets his doom on the toilet.
Yes.
Yeah, he deserves it. He's a blood-sucking lawyer. I'm not going to describe who the character is. Look, the end feels very much like a carbon copy of the Godzilla battle, which is great. Yeah. But it feels like it plays it almost safe and doesn't quite have the carry-through towards the end of the film. But look, as I said, I had a lot of fun with this.
Not on at many cinemas, just a few small cinemas.
The independent regional cinemas you might find this
Valhalla
in.
Or something. Yeah. Okay. Scott's called from Ballarat. Scott, what did you want to say?
Yeah, I was just wanting to know whether Josh is aware whether there's a movie being made of The Great Wall of China. It was a book that came out last year from Matthew Riley. Based around dragons and basically China building this zoo with dragons and whatever in it, and had some fantastic scenes in the book.
That sounds like a good old concept for a novel. No. Do we know, Josh?
That'd be news to me. But from a studio executive point of view, you mentioned dragons. I think that would...
Great Wall of China. Exactly. You mentioned overseas markets.
Exactly.
Like it's ticking the boxes, Scott.
Yeah, so it was very similar to sort of like a Jurassic Park, Jurassic World sort of type scenario, but with dragons. And, it was a fantastic book, I reckon.
Okay, look, nice question. Don't know if we can give you an answer, I'm afraid. Haven't seen Jurassic Park 3. Does that matter? Gaz wants to know in Geelong.
Oh, it's better if you haven't.
The second and third, really, you can probably miss. Went to see Jurassic World last night, says Kevin. Best way to describe it, a dumbed-down version of the first, with more ridiculous dinosaur attack scenes. So if you can switch off your mind, it's a no-brainer and a fun roller coaster ride. And someone else saying the dinosaurs are not from the Jurassic era. They're from an earlier era, so that might be not quite correct.
Well, I think that was a complaint leveled against Spielberg's original. But Jurassic Park, I think, sounds better than, was it Cretaceous Park or something?
I think it's Triassic.
Oh, Triassic. Jurassic sounds good. So,
It does sound a lot better. Josh, thanks so much.
Pleasure.
Josh Nelson, Filmology.com. It's the same on Twitter. 54, the director's cut, and Jurassic World, the two films we were talking about.